So hi, my name is Molly Swain. I'm from Calgary, Treaty 7 Territory, in Alberta, and I'm part of the growing Indigenous diaspora in Montreal Lake. I would of course like to first acknowledge that this demo is taking place on unceded Haudenosaunee territory. And having said that, I want to further acknowledge that recognizing that we live and work on stolen territory should be just the first step in respecting those whose lands we are occupying. To be a respectful guest on others' lands requires more than just a simple acknowledgement, and I encourage all settlers and visitors to learn about the protocols and to be a good guest while you're here. So I'd like to speak briefly on the topic of gendered violence and urban Indigenous resistance. I'll be talking about some pretty graphic violence, so just a heads up or a trigger warning that that is something that's coming up. So gendered and homophobic violence against us is woven into the fabric of Canadian society. One of the first tactics of the colonizers was to break down the often radically egalitarian social structures of the nations they encountered by imposing their own oppressive concepts of binary gender and sexuality along with Christian patriarchy, weakening our social fabrics to facilitate Euro-Christian domination. Mass slaughter of Indigenous peoples who did not conform to European concepts of gender, people who we would consider today to be two-spirit, repressed and destroyed vital parts of our cultures and nations and forced those peoples to the margins when they had always had a central role in so many of our nations. Historically, the rape and murder of Indigenous women and girls at the hands of state forces and individual settler men during and after battles often included the mutilation or removal of our sexual parts, which would be sold or turned into clothing and accessories to be worn proudly by settler heroes of the frontier. Under settler colonialism, Indigenous women's bodies are literally products for the consumption of settlers. We are figured as stereotypical squaws, spiritual earth mothers, and Indian princesses, tropes that render us dehumanized, primitive, and inseparable from the land. The assumption that we must disappear and must always be disappearing to allow settlers' rightful claims over our lands manifests as racist, gendered, and homophobic violence aimed at Indigenous women and two-spirits. The long arm of the law has never extended its protection to us. The police, the courts, and the legislative and governing bodies of the settler state function only to criminalize Indigenous bodies. Settler rights to use and exploit the land and settler rights to access Indigenous bodies are conflated under the logics of colonialism and capitalism. And Indigenous peoples are further devalued even as our lands and sovereignty continue to be violated in the name of progress. Policies of the racist colonial state, the extraction economy, and the tenets of Western liberalism work together to legitimize the genocide of Indigenous peoples and implicitly condone the disappearance and murder of women and two-spirit peoples. Urban Indigenous peoples are often left out of this discussion, but we are just as vulnerable to the most violent manifestations of colonial oppression. Cut off from our lands, and often from our communities, urban Indigenous people face intense isolation, culture shock, and a lack of family and social support networks. Despite all this, our resistance is stronger than our vulnerabilities. Settler colonialism dictates that we should assimilate. Instead, we are infiltrating the system, siphoning and redirecting resources and materials to our relatives fighting on the land, making and taking space, organizing our own classes, workshops, skill shares, childcare, programming, creating and distributing our own art and media, building strong communities, and engaging in long-term and multifaceted decolonizing work that prioritizes comprehensive critiques of and resistance to settler colonial patriarchy, homophobia, and racism. Despite the epidemic levels of violence we experience, we are strong and vibrant individuals and communities, and there are so many Indigenous people who are doing amazing work to fight back against our oppression. Find our work, learn from us, introduce your friends and family to our perspectives, defend Indigenous women and Two-Spirit folks, support Indigenous struggles, and recognize your own complicity in a system that functions through ongoing genocide. Thank you.
I'm sorry, folks, but an apology is not enough. And I'm sorry, but to me, reconciliation is not justice. Native title is not land rights. Those are the words of Gary Foley and Robbie Thorpe, two former Black Panthers in Australia. January the 26th, 1788 was the date that a fleet of military ships from England turned out on the Australian shores and invaded their land. They built a military penal colony similar to Guantanamo Bay. It was called Botany Bay. Australia manifested from this convict penal colony to what it is today. There's been no treaty with the original people of this land, no consent, and no, obviously there's no jurisdiction as they invaded their land by military force. That's what Australia Day represents to Aboriginal people. They call it Invasion Day. In 1972, the Aboriginal 10th Embassy was created by the Black Power Movement in order to put a term to the official assimilation policy of the Australian government. Four Aboriginals were sent in front of the Parliament in Canberra to put a tent in front of the invaders' Parliament. Why a tent? Because it represented the conditions of life of an Aboriginal person at that time. The Black Power emerged and created health services for the people of their communities. It was called community control. They were taking back the control of their life from the government who was controlling their welfare. The Australian government used Black Power as a propaganda to put fear in the wider communities through the medias and send the cops with guns. They killed almost everybody. The Black Power movement has three major principles: self-determination, sovereignty, and land rights. In 1957, Willie Tyda, his brothers and sisters from Palm Island provocated a strike for basic human rights. It's only after a 10-year referendum, after that strike, that the Australian government finally accepted to count Aboriginal people as humans for a second-class citizenship in 1967. Before that date, it was not illegal to kill an Aboriginal person because they were, to the eyes of the white Australian policies, part of the flora and fauna. Today, you don't need to have a white Australia policy and legislation anymore, or a white book anymore in Canada, to know that it is still embedded into people's mind and behaviors for settlers to continue to run their show, and that we are still the First Nation treated and second, the first who comes and last. Behaviors such as celebrating the date of the invasions, symbolic gestures like holding the flags of those who are our oppressors, the rapes and murders of Indigenous women, the illegal land grabs, the charter, the situation today is not much different. There is still racial discrimination and a high rate of murders in custody. 80% of the carceral population in the Northern Territories are Aboriginal men and women. The Australian government suspended the Anti-Racial Discrimination Act, a useless piece of legislation to implement the Northern Territory intervention. The Northern Territory intervention has been extended by both of the Australian governments and gives the free go to the media to openly discriminate Aboriginal people, the free go to the cops to take control of any Aboriginal organization, and to incarcerate an Aboriginal person for no reason, which is the case right now. If you're caught with a beer on a mission, which is the equivalent of a reservation here, you go to jail for 1.5 years and you pay $75,000. The Northern Territory interventions was created by government when they suddenly realized that there was mining interest in those regions. Elders, songmen, healers, and any person who passed down the culture are now all stuck in institutionalized and bureaucratic concentration camps built by the Australian government and assaulted by the police forces, obviously with the participation of the Canadian government. The apartheid started in Australia many years ago and is still on today. I say it again, you don't need to have a white Australia policy or the white book in Canada to know that it is embedded into the dominant colonial psychology. All you have to do is to replace the KKK members by cops, or to replace churches by other assimilationist institutions like capitalist schools that does not reflect the needs and the values of Indigenous people. Colonialism is not an event that starts and ends. It is a structure, a systemic use of violence, an intemporal violation of Indigenous rights. The colonial state is violent by nature. It forces us, by its structures, to redefine every aspect of our lives and minimize our visibility to some folkloric bullshit activities that are accepted only because they go with the logical of the development of a capitalist society. 40 years of struggle from the Black Power movement in Australia for land rights, and what do they get instead? Native title, the most inferior form of land tenure under British law. Native title, a recuperation of the Aboriginal political movement by white corporate Australia. What else do we get? We got welcome to countries. I would like to welcome you all to the land of my ancestor. It's the fucking insult because we don't own our countries. It's a fucking insult because they don't want us here. A few days ago, Joe Oliver from the Harper government said that we Native people were dysfunctional, and they keep saying that we're a threat to their economic agenda. Nothing new. We've been a threat since the day they came 500 years ago and decided to steal our land for mining and shit. What do you see now? The same exact shit. They now use compromised people to give credibility to their premises that to promises that they're not gonna keep. In the face of a vicious, racist, stolen propaganda campaign on the part of the Australian Canadian mining industry councils.
They demonstrate terrifying misogyny, but they also demonstrate fear of women and the power of women. It is moments like these that the talker has legitimized. in Quebec, but in other parts of the world today and in history, we see how nationalism is the last resort of bankrupt regimes. The Charter of Values is a deliberately formulated strategy for a bankrupt nationalism that has run out of steam. And we cannot let the other political parties off the hook as well when they say hijab is okay, but niqab is not. Or when they go along with saying that in some public sectors, there should be no hijab worn. We accept nothing less than total equality to self-determine how we live our lives and how we dress. The Charter of Values is also a distraction. It takes focus off the economic precarity that many women live in. The Charter of Values and the obsession that we hear in the media and in government and semi-government circles about honor killing and forced marriage imply that all other women and children are safe. This is totally untrue. We only have to look each year at the growing number of women and children who are murdered in Quebec by male intimates and fathers to know that it is a total lie that only women and children in minority communities, especially Muslim communities, are at risk. This is a conscious manipulation of people's fears and insecurities after 9/11. It is also a continuation of settler colonialist logic and ideology that does not own up to the violence that has been done and continues to be done to indigenous peoples on their own lands. The Charter is a tool to divide and conquer. We do not accept the tactic of divide and rule, white Quebecois versus minority Quebecois. We do not accept the tactic to racialize and marginalize minority communities by focusing on the women of these communities. We do not accept the exploitation of marginalized communities in the service of capitalist and neoliberal agendas. And we do not accept any impositions on women's bodies by priests, by pundits, by imams, or by the state. We stand in solidarity with people, including women-identified people, who struggle for a dignified life. We oppose all coercion. We support women who refuse to wear the veil because they are being forced to do so. But we also support women who refuse to remove their veil because they are being told to do so.
Hi, I'm Vince from Nolan's Illegal. I was also handing out cake earlier. And this is Sarah from No One's Legal.
Hi.
Hi. We're here today to denounce the Quebec Charter of Values and stand in solidarity with anti-racist struggles around the world. We oppose the Charter because of its blatantly racist and xenophobic aims. While claiming to promote neutrality, the Charter plainly targets and makes a spectacle of the bodies of Muslim women, which in turn provides the ferment for an open climate of Islamophobia. While the public forms of violence that the Charter and its proponents inflict are indeed shameless, shameful, and yes, ostentatious, this should not be seen as simply an exceptionally ugly moment in Quebec electoral politics that could be struck down with strategic voting against the PQ. The Charter is part of a larger historical campaign to define and delineate the proper Quebec citizen as white, both in appearance and in values. Fighting racism does not end with opposing the Quebec Charter of Values. Nor does the removal of the PQ mean that racism will cease to exist in Quebec. This country was founded on white supremacy, settler colonialism, and exclusionary migrant policies that displaced folks of color from their home countries, exploit them as temporary workers, and demand their removal if they are not deemed valuable to capitalistic interests.
In order to fight racism, we must oppose the illegitimacy of the Canadian settler state and its ongoing occupation of stolen native land. Simultaneously, we must oppose the imposition of its borders, as they are inherently violent and tear families apart, incarcerate thousands of people in immigration detention centers, force people to live in precarity and without access to basic social services, and uphold a two-tier justice system in which non-citizens will be deported if they have committed a crime. But erasure requires active decolonization. It requires centering both the voices and struggles of indigenous people, black communities, and non-status migrants. It means opposing police brutality, the prison industrial complex, and racial profiling. And there are institutions that actively continue to subjugate racialized people in the interest of whiteness. People of color have never fit within the heteropatriarchal, capitalist, and white supremacist ideals that this country has been founded on, and have therefore treated people of color and racialized people as inhuman. I say fuck that! As previously mentioned, we continue to live in a society that criminalizes people of color, that deems poor racialized migrants unworthy of living here, that actively continues the intensive colonial extermination of indigenous lands and communities, that creates a culture of xenophobia that forces people of color to be assimilable and still subservient and less than white people. As we march today, we make commitment to continue to destroy all the proponents of white supremacy, including the racism that we ourselves perpetuate. Smash racism, smash white supremacy, smash the charter, the borders, and the Canadian settler state. Thank you.